You know, on this show, we talk about the aggregation of marginal gains. And what we're really referring to is this idea of getting 1% better. Today, we thought, it's been 4 years. We've actually talked about a lot of ways to get 1% better. Let's stack those together and make an episode. Welcome to the Ultimate Crowdsource Personal Finance Show. This is Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, 100 ways to get 1% better. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well. Yeah, this should be a lot of fun. So we, I guess what inspired this, well, there are two things that inspired us, right? It's the episode that just released, episode 317, with our good buddy Chris Hutchins. And we talked about All the Hacks, which is his new podcast, which should be amazing. And actually on our website, we published exactly that, 100 ways to get 1% better with your finances, but really it's with your life. And yeah, I think you and I kind of talking through this concept, like you said, that aggregation of marginal gains. It sounds so kind of like hoity-toity, right, when you hear it like that, but it's really just looking for these little ways you can improve. And when you're constantly trying to improve, and especially as I see it, it's like when you can invest a little bit of time to fix something that then you're never going to have to invest that time again. That to me is like the ultimate in this aggregation of marginal gains. Like, Jonathan, I used to, this is going to sound so antiquated, I have file cabinets in my closet. I know you have like no paper in your house, but I have like, it's ridiculous, like literal file cabinets that are filled. And I mean, most of the stuff in there is years old, but what I decided to do was, all right, A, I need to join 2021 and turn anything that I'm getting paper statements or whatever, that's got to stop immediately. So I went through, that took a lot of time, but I shut them off and now I get emails.
You're talking about individual bills, right? That's where you're starting
with. Yeah, so yeah, wherever I could, right? So obviously like credit card bills, yeah, sorry if I wasn't clear enough. Credit card bills are not coming in the mail anymore. There are PDFs, right? And I just save those PDFs or the few bills that I can't get electronically. When they come into the house, I scan them immediately. So I don't have to think about it. They don't pile up.
Scan them is like a friction point. I just want to like focus on that. Do you have like a dedicated scanner for this, a la some accountants do? Is there like something that you came up with? Because for me, scanning is like, all right, how do I use the scanner? You know, does the software work on the printer? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, no, for me, it's just, it's on my printer. And I mean, it takes 5 seconds. The PDF file gets sent over to my computer. And then I have a folder, a main folder where everything is saved. And it's just, it's incredibly easy. Like I have a digital file cabinet basically. And what the cool aspect is, I then take that sheet of paper and put it immediately in my shredder bin. So it is gone. It's not lying around. You know, we always joked about like, I want this oasis in my house. You know, I want it like, I just don't want the psychic baggage of just seeing stuff lying around. So like, it feels so good to scan this thing and then just put it in the shredder bin. It's fantastic. So anyway, I'm sure somebody out there, but I'm sure you have a better, more high-tech version, but like, damn, this is really working for me.
It's awesome. You give me too much credit. I wish I did. I'm getting buried, dude. I'm getting buried. Someone was actually telling me like about this one company, and I'll have to dig up the name. I'll come back to it later on in this episode, where you just bundle up all of your mail, or you take all your mail and you take a picture of it and send it to them. And specifically, you know, you talked about the bills, right? So I'm talking more about the spam, you know, the 12-week plum letter or whatever it is, where you get all the special deals for XYZ shops. It's just that plasticky type paper that shows up. And they say, you just take a picture of whatever that mailing is, and they go on your behalf and they go unenroll you from all those things. I think it was like, I'm going to look it up, so don't hold me to this name, but something like Paper Karma, something along those lines. So you can have a company, and it's not a huge subscription fee. It is a SaaS, but, you know, or I don't know if SaaS is the right word, but it is a subscription cost. But, you know, I mean, you imagine at some point you could probably just like use it while you're getting rid of the stuff. And then once the stuff's gone, I don't know if you need to like maintain it for a lifetime. So it would seem to me like some combination of dialing in your system for your bills, reducing the number you're getting, taking pictures of the ones you need, making it very easy to use the scanner, knowing how to use the scanner. And then on the other end of that, for the spam, I think there's some lists that you can go register, like do not mail register list type deals. We should look into that. That would be something. I don't know. And it does go to 1% better, right? I don't even know if this was on our ultimate article list. We might need to actually mail this, but how can I decrease the amount of time that I have to spend handling the stuff that enters my mailbox, get that time back? It is worth something. Your time is worth something, and it's worth more than, you know, $15 an hour even. That's like a minimum threshold, but let's not spend all of our time just trying to figure out how to get rid of spam. All right, dude. Well, I think that actually points us, we mentioned the episode with Chris. I think we should come back to that for just a half second, because literally as soon as we finished the live call with Chris, he mentioned to us a massive one that was tailored specifically towards you, Brad, but really our audience, I know, will love this one as well. It didn't make it into the episode. I wanted to go ahead and share it now. What is the last hack that we would want to add on to that episode with Chris?
Yeah, this was a really cool one that we just didn't have time to mention in the last episode. So it's as you said, it's built around your library, but it's for the digital books. So basically, there's this extension that Chris uses, and it's literally at libraryextension.com, and it allows you to see the book availability from your local library. I have not installed this yet, but Chris showed us a screenshot of it, and it was really cool. So Chris lives in the Bay Area, and he was just shopping around, showing us on the screen at Amazon.com, and he was on just some random ebook, and this extension added on that said San Francisco Public Library, copies available, and there was a check mark, and then it just said borrow or place a hold. And I mean, it was amazing. Like it overlaid on top of Amazon.com. So I don't know about you, Jonathan, but yeah, I've been, especially this past year, just rocking the eBooks on my Kindle. And it's kind of annoying to go to whatever it is, Overdrive or Libby, and you just like randomly looking for books. And it seems like invariably everything's a wait list or hold, whatever. But it's pretty cool to just have that availability at Amazon.com and just see it at a glance, like book by book. It was really cool, right?
I mean, literally, as you're about to maybe purchase a book on Amazon, you just notice that there's a copy available at your local library. Like, that's a game changer. It's just, yeah, it needs to be mentioned. It's high value.
Oh, and that's brilliant because that's the behavioral side. Like, I'm thinking in terms of somebody who uses the library, right? Like, my bias is to go to the library. But what you're saying is even bigger than this, which is, okay, hey, you install this extension one time. And then even if you're someone who would be inclined to just buy books reflexively, if you're at Amazon and you see, oh, wow, this is available at my library for the same one click, and I save money that I was literally going to spend, like that's a no-brainer. So yeah, actually that's the better use case, Jonathan.
Cool. The psychological behavioral component, that's it. And let me just point this out. Like, we have a publishing arm. We publish books. I like buying books, and I want you to buy books, but I also want you to use your library and get full value. And let me give you a use case here for those of you who are like, well, what's the line there? What I personally do is whenever possible, I try to get the book at the library. Just personally, I get the book at the library. If I find myself wanting to renew it more than once or twice, I'm like, you know what? I should probably just buy the book. Like, this book was worth the price of admission. It's one that I'm going to refer back to. It's one that I want in my home. I should own the book. And that would be a use case. So whenever possible, use your library. And to make it easier to get in front of your own, kind of Amazon behavioral analysis charts, just have the extension log you're about to buy. Just notice it's right there. Oh, my library has it. Maybe I'll just try there first. And if it tells you it's a 45-week hold, okay, well, you know, maybe we'll just go and buy it. But let's start there. Let's see what happens. I mean, that's big though, dude. I think that is one. We wanted to start with that one because it was tied to our All the Hacks episode, but two, it kind of gets us thinking about the library again. You know, ours reopened and we were able to go back. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's funny. Laura, actually, my wife Laura, visited our local library a couple times this past week. So yeah, it's nice, that was pretty much like the last thing that I'd seen that would, had not reopened after COVID. So yeah, it was, that was kind of cool. Yeah, as you said, we are Choosify. We've always had the tagline, friends of the library. Right? That is a massive savings each year.
All right. So we're going to go through these lists. We're just going to pick a few of the items because they spark some conversations. Highly encourage you to go check out the full list. 100 reasons. It might be 100 and growing, but 100 ways to get 1% better. So Brad, how can they access that article if they want to just get the full list? There'll be a link in the show notes, but can we give them a direct URL as well?
Yeah, you bet. And just for anybody who doesn't know, basically how we do the show notes is just you go to our website, choosify.com/, and then just the episode number. So this episode is 318. So you just choosify.com/318. And that works for our entire catalog. So back to, you know, the initial episodes 001, that'll take you there. So that's really the easiest. But yeah, to your point, Jonathan, we did set up a short code just for this particular article. So choosify.com/1%. So that's one, the number one. And then write out the word percent. So choosify.com/1%.
All right. So we are going to selectively pick these action items as they kind of stand out to Brad and myself, probably ones we're leaning into in a big way these days. But, you know, you might have a different priority list than us. So don't limit yourself to what we talk about on this show. I'm going to start, Brad, with number three. You can jump ahead of me if you want to. Reading or listening to, because it's related, reading or listening to one new finance or investing book each month. Now, I want to expand outside of that. I would actually change this slightly. I would just say reading or listening to one nonfiction book each month, one book that improves you in some way. So nonfiction isn't, it could be a fiction book, but it scales your knowledge base. It scales the information that you have to work with in some way. So is it investing? Is it personal finance? Is it development, you know, self-development? And I would even scale outside of a book. And I would say, it could be a course on Skillshare or Udemy or something else. It could be a YouTube tutorial where you're learning something new, something that scales your knowledge base, but something you could point back to and you could say, I have a better understanding of how the world works now than I did even 1 month ago. And I attribute that to, you know, this source.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's funny. I'll take that even 10 steps more broad and just say, you need to be learning new things, right? Like we cannot get stuck. So I think that's one of the beautiful things about our FI mindset, right? And the whole community that we have here is we are people who like to learn. We are never getting stuck on that's the way you do it or that's the way I've always done it or some other nonsense. It's you need to learn. And the best way to do that, I mean, just there's so many free resources. Jonathan, like you said, obviously YouTube jumps to mind. I suspect that's on this list somewhere, but you can learn essentially anything you need in the entire world on YouTube. We talked about the library. There are free courses, the MOOCs, the what are they, the massively open online courses, whatever they stand for. There's Khan Academy. There's, you know, like you said, sure, personal finance books are great, but you know, you kind of run to the end of that pretty quickly. But you can then get into psychology. Like, why do humans work? Like, why do we work the way we work, right? Like, what makes us tick? That I've found is a never-ending well of information. And it just helps you get better as a person when you can spot your own biases and blind spots. So yeah, I think very broadly is never stop learning. And, you know, Jonathan, that kind of ties into number four here on the list, which is learn a new skill, right? Like that's something near and dear to your heart. And I mean, that ties in both in terms of just learning something new in terms of, you know, just background knowledge, but also then learning maybe a marketable skill or just something that interests you, right? Like it doesn't have to be something you're going to turn into a job necessarily, though it certainly might.
Yeah. You know, I think between both of those combined, when you start to think about your life as this Venn diagram, and all of it should hopefully point to balance, right? But there's these different aspects of your life that you're trying to lean into with a little bit more of a priority at various points. Early on, it's like to get an education that will allow us to get a job. That's usually something that is. And so, you know, when we're talking about skills, you could pursue skills that will allow you to earn additional income, to increase your earning potential. You could learn skills that allow you to relate to other humans in a better manner, to understand yourself and what motivates you, to be able to extract more results, you know, out of the time that you're given on this earth. You could learn skills that allow you to develop your health. I know that's something that it's a lifetime to master, right? And so you need to, at varying points, really lean into that. There's so many different ways that you can take skills, but you should never get complacent. But there's one little there's kind of like a little line of delineation here. We're going to talk about this in a future episode because it's something that I'm still struggling with. Because I think especially in the entrepreneur space, we look at complacency as a bad thing, which, you know, most of us say, yeah, okay, don't get complacent. But I think sometimes we lose sight of also the other half of that, which is content, you know? And so sometimes being content can look like complacency. And I think it's important to kind of check ourselves to understand, are we happy with where we are? What is it that drives us and what is our why? We'll talk about that. I think there's a whole episode around that I want to come back to in a future point. But I think that as creatures, we were born to do more than watch Netflix. You know, we were born to do more than just consume. So if you are going to consume, let's consume with an eye towards how can we take the consumption of knowledge and turn that into creation down the road. And it doesn't have to be for income potential. It could be for your own fulfillment. But just, I think you'll get more value out of that long term than binge watching the HBO Max, you know, archives, the Netflix archives, et cetera. Brad, did you want to add anything on there?
Yeah, no, that covers it for learning a new skill. I think, you know, some of these other, this is amazing. I kind of want to touch on every single one of these. We could do probably 30 episodes, but right. Exercise at home and try a new hiking or biking trail every week. You know, get outside. You can exercise and you can spend money for classes. And in fairness, I'm not knocking that. You know, my wife and I are both members at CrossFit and we love it, but we also exercise at home. We also love to get outside. We actually just took a little vacation a couple weeks ago, and Jonathan did this really cool bicycle tour, kind of like down this mountain. It was in Southwest Virginia. It was amazing. It was called the Virginia Creeper Trail. It was one of like the single coolest family vacations we've ever had. It was just being out in nature, right? And it was really, really neat. Like there's just so much to be said for just mixing it up, right? Doing something different. So there's a never ending, you know, again, going back to YouTube, right? Like there's a never ending stream of free exercise classes. You could take classes from world-class experts and everything from strength training to yoga to meditation to whatever, right? Like easily for free on YouTube. So it's not a question of if it's there. It's just a question of, are you going to open up that browser and search and actually do it, right?
I love it. I have, and your adventure, by the way, we put that on our list as well. We want to like, oh, you sparked the idea. All right. We're not letting that one go. Let's go lock that down. It sounded absolutely fantastic. Nice. There are so many on this list, dude. I don't think we can mention every single one, and they're actually, all of them are really good. Like these are not throwaway ideas. All of these are like, oh yeah. Each one of them sparks its own level of, let's dive a little bit deeper. But I think, you know, you just mentioned hiking and biking. You know, there are other things that you can do in your community, and there's some suggestions here. And, you know, I think one great way of how can I get more involved in my community and how can I look at my community through maybe a, you know, a FI lens is make sure you're aware of your local Choose FI group and what's going on there. Now, COVID's been a very interesting time for all of us, but, you know, we're coming through this, you know, and community is going to mean more now than ever. So do your part to invest in your local community and you'll reap the rewards for decades. It's truly phenomenal. If you want to access, or you want to find out more about the local groups in your area, just go to choosefi.com/local. Let's go ahead and move into this next category. It's really more focused on your finances, but I think it's going to be applicable for many people that are maybe new to the financial independence path, and that is dealing with debt. You know, where I don't have the luxury of really thinking about the other side. I'm still buried in debt right now. And I just found this. What do my 1% actions, my 1% improvements, what should I be considering? So Brad, I'll let you start.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, if you're in debt, I think this actually comes back to the very first action you should take when you first find the concept of FI, which is you got to sit down and you have to be honest with yourself, right? You need to say like, where am I today? Right. And it's not beating yourself up about things in the past, but it's about taking action to make yourself better, right? Truly that 1% better. So it's, all right, what do I owe? Who do I owe? How much do I owe? What is my current like income statement look like, right? How much am I making and how much am I spending every month? If that's negative, if that's in the red, you've got an emergency on your hands, right? And you need to fix that. And that kind of goes hand in hand with stop using your credit cards. Right. Like we are not the anti-credit card place here. Obviously, Jonathan, we talk, one of our major kind of life strategies is using travel rewards points that come from credit cards. But that's for people who have a handle on it. Right. Clearly, that's a totally different ballgame. But for people who are in debt and continue to shovel themselves deeper, you need to stop. You need to stop using your credit cards. You need to figure out, hey, what does this look like? What do I have to do? What can I do this month to cut some expenses, maybe earn some more money? How can I get at least to a point where I'm not adding to my debt? So I don't know, that to me is just like the overriding starting point here. But, you know, obviously then you can move on from there with like real strategies on how to tackle that.
And that really does get, you know, once we are in that place, now we're looking at figuring out, you know, what is that strategy? Is it a debt snowball? Is it a debt avalanche? Are these new terms that you don't even know about? Let's dive down that rabbit hole and find out, is there a way that we could optimize even our debt repay off? And, you know, you could get even more complex and say, are there more advanced strategies? Like, you know, I have a bunch of credit card debt that's very high interest. Are there any, you know, credit card zero balance transfer strategies out there that I could layer on top of this? You probably wouldn't start there. You're going to start with, what is my debt? How long will it take me to pay it off? How should I approach this? But, you know, this is something, Brad, maybe you could think about that episode that we did with the debt-free guys, where they really talked about that additional complexity is another layer to this. So I'll let you come back to that. But even all of that, that implies that you're working with the credit system. And for many people that find themselves in this situation, you know, they're coming from this hair on fire scenario, they have bad credit. So, you know, credit, for better or worse, is something, it seems to be an operating structure for the world that we all live in. And those that have good credit tend to have access to better rates and prices throughout, you know, all of their purchasing habits over time. So it would probably be in all of our best interest to understand, what is that score? How is it comprised? How can I improve it and get on a plan to improve your credit score?
Yeah, the credit score is a big one. It really is. But yeah, like you said, you need to get to that point of stability. And for a lot of people, the credit score, that is going to increase over months and years. And it's just a matter of doing the right things, right? It's paying on time and in full every single month, never missing a payment. I think people, there's a lot of just unforced errors. You know, it's, hey, I didn't make that payment on time because I was lazy, or I missed it, or I didn't have a system set up, right? I didn't have a system set up to auto pay this because, hey, maybe at that point I didn't have any money in the bank and I had to worry about, oh no, am I getting my paycheck on the 14th of the month and this credit card bill was due, you know, 2 days later, but maybe I got paid, you know, like all these things. Like when you're coming from a place of stability into strength financially, right? Then you can make decisions based on, hey, how can I make this easy, right? At the heart of this, a lot of it is based on simplicity. How do I set up a system? Like personally, I'm never going to miss a credit card payment because I have it on auto pay.
That is a one, let's not, I mean, I don't see that on this list. We should probably add it. That is a massive 1% improvement that's like locked and loaded once you do it. So I genuinely, Brad, because until we really discussed this, it wasn't on my radar as well that I could literally check that button. It's not something that I think comes by default when you sign up for a card. Make sure people understand what that means practically and why they need to do that today.
Yeah. And thanks. I'm sorry to gloss over that because yeah, it's not obvious, but when you sign up for a credit card, let's say it's with American Express or Chase, I have, you know, a number of cards from them and I just go into the payments area and I'm able to set up an auto pay. And you log in, you put in your, you know, very securely, obviously put in your checking account information and they just pull the money out on whatever the due date is for that credit card. And you can actually specify, like, let's say, for instance, you were someone, I'm not advocating this, obviously, I'm advocating paying in full every month in a perfect world. But for people who can only pay the minimum or can only pay a certain amount, you can set up even the amount that you auto pay. I just click pay full statement balance. And that happens every month on the exact same date. And it is so, so easy to set up. It takes 5 minutes. And again, that's one of those things, you know, we say front load the sacrifice, right? Like jokingly here, the sacrifice is 5 minutes to set this up. But you took that extra 5 minutes and you never have to think about it again. You never have to think about, oh, do I need to log in to pay this? Do I need to write a check and mail this off, right? Like it's just done. So I think anytime you can set up a system, and that's certainly, Jonathan, that's, you know, a much larger point in terms of probably all of this 1% better. It's like, how can you set up systems so that you can't fail, right?
Totally agree. That's a big one. And I think a lot of people, you could have that done today and you may never have had that before. It's just, it's do it. All right, we're going to move into emergency fund savings. And I want to actually change the term here slightly as we roll into it, because there is, yes, having an emergency fund or having access to funds that you can use for, you know, things that life throws at you. But many people are starting out, they don't even have $1,000 that doesn't have, you know, three or four names attached to it of where it needs to go. And if you do not have $1,000 to your name, you don't need an emergency fund. You need a crisis fund. You need to have $1,000 that doesn't have a bill attached to it that you could draw on if you need it for something at a moment's notice. It's a huge priority. Now, once you have that $1,000, now maybe we start talking about having an emergency fund and where that emergency fund needs to be. And a couple strategies. Here's an interesting one. If this is your first year really getting started with us, most people that are just starting to pay attention to their finances are going to get a tax refund. And what an opportunity, instead of buying your next vacation, to use that to take care of the crisis fund and put something, you know, into some investments, into some savings. And then here's how you can get 1% better. Do whatever you can not to get a tax refund the following year. And Brad, I'll give this back to you, because I know as a former accountant, this is something that just never made sense to you. And it seems to make sense to everybody else. So I'll let you stop here. Why would we want to not get a tax refund going forward?
Yeah, this is counterintuitive for a lot of people, right? Because you just, for most people who can't save money, don't save money, the only kind of forced savings they have is that big tax refund that they get every year, a couple thousand bucks, whatever it may be. And it almost seems akin to free money, right? Like, oh, the government is just giving me money back. Here's my tax refund. It's this magical thing. But that's your money. That's your money that you have withheld from your paycheck every single paycheck or pay period for the entire year. And you've been using that, basically that's your tax withholding that offsets against whatever your tax liability is. That's the actual tax you owe. It's not that withholding, because just as a thought experiment, you could theoretically withhold 100% of your money, right? Like, that doesn't mean that's what you actually owe the government. That's just the amount that you decided to send them to hold on to offset against that money. So long story short, you really don't want a big tax refund. That's not ideal at all, because what that means is the government has been holding that money for you for potentially over a year in some cases, right? From your, let's say your January paycheck from the prior year all the way through April 15th, and you're not earning any interest on that. You're not doing anything productive with that. You're not investing in the stock market. You're not investing it wherever, right? Like, the opportunity cost of that is potentially big. Now, again, this is all predicated on, once you're following the path to FI and you have a savings rate, you're not going to just magically blow that extra money on garbage, right? It's going to go into savings each paycheck. So for someone who's financially responsible, you don't want a big tax refund. It doesn't make any sense. So the ideal, Jonathan, we've joked about this before, right? The ideal tax return is plus or minus $100. So either, you know, can you get in that range of, I owe between $100 to getting a refund of $100? It's really, really, really hard to do. But
if we ever had some sort of like gamification pathway to financial independence, like an app or something like that, it would be a place where you could self-report if you got inside that number, and there would be some gamification points on the other side. Cause that's serious, a pro level tip, you know, as you start to progress through this journey.
And it is hard to change your mindset on that. There's no question about it. But yeah, a tax refund is not your friend. It's just your money that you should have had all along. So don't think about it as free money.
Hey, this is Andrew from the Choose FI team. Hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to get right back to it after these quick messages.
All right, we're going to move down categories here, and we're going to talk about home expenses. And Brad, I know this is one that I think you've actually added a little bit to your skill stack with your watching YouTube videos to do some home repairs. But I think all of us, you know, there's some stuff that you're going to need a handyman to do. It's going to be outside your proficiency, likely, or you could learn it, but it's going to cost you a lot to learn it or to buy the tool to do it, et cetera. But there's other stuff that you can do a lot, and it's probably a lot more than you can think. And it's probably worth just doing a couple searches for everything that you encounter on YouTube to just get a sense for what's actually involved. And you might actually go to this, you know, mythical store that's out there called like Lowe's or Home Depot's, and just to see what stuff they actually have there and whether or not you could bring one item back and get it actually fixed with the benefit of a YouTube tutorial. Brad, I know we did one other episode where we talked about, even if that one handyman project feels a little bit too far out there, we talked about the light bulb situation and how that is, no one has an excuse for not being able to change a light bulb. It's more than a meme.
Yeah, it is much more than a meme. And yeah, I mean, that's something you can replace your old incandescent bulbs, if you have any, with, you know, newer technology, LED and the like. I mean, that that theoretically should save you long term. I think there's, you know, other things you can do that, you know, maybe something like even as simple as adjusting your thermostat, right, by a couple degrees. Like, again, none of what we talk about at Choosify, none of this is about deprivation. So, you know, listen, if you value a home at a certain temperature, go for it, feel free. But right, for the rest of us, like, I mean, we've actually come to the point where now, because in the summer, we keep our house probably at like 79 or 80 degrees. Like, when we have our air conditioner pumping, it actually feels uncomfortable to walk in from like a 95 degree Richmond day to like a 70 degree house. Like, it feels unusual. Like, we've trained ourselves to the point where like it actually is much more comfortable this way. So, but that said, at night, we value sleeping in a cold environment. So, you know, we lower it down at night. And this works both ways, right? Because we save money on heat in the winter and maybe spend a little bit extra on air conditioning in the summer. But, you know, again, it's what you value. Can you make these little changes, right? Like lowering the temperature on your hot water heater. I mean, there are people that when you put your hot water on, it's scalding. Like, is that really necessary? You know, no, I don't think so. I think it's actually beneficial to lower the temperature. So, you know, is this going to make you wealthy overnight? No, it's not. But again, it's about stacking these things, right? Like, that's the whole point about the 1% better.
You know, it is kind of funny as you're talking about deprivation, or rather pushing the limits of what you can do with your AC. It reminded me of Tanya Hester from Our Next Life. And this was a fun thing that her and her husband did, was just like, they want to be wearing gloves before they go change the thermostat. And as funny as that was, actually reminded me of a kind of a meme, I guess you would say. I've pulled it up here for those of you that are watching the YouTube channel. But this is just a quick, easy fix that you could put on your thermostat. I'll run you through the flowchart analysis. Brad, can you see it on my screen?
I'll read it.
I
got it.
All right. So here it is. You got your old Honeywell thermostat and you got to post it on there. And here's the conditions that you have set for, you know, those kids coming behind you that are thinking about changing it. Before turning the heat on, do you, question number one, these are yes, no questions. Do you have socks on? Yes or no. Do you have a long sleeve shirt on? Yes or no. Do you have underwear or pants on? Yes or no. Can you see your breath? No or yes. So if any of these are selected, you know, yes, 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 no for the last one, it's a trick one. No heat is needed. And then the combination on the other side is no, no, or yes. So yes being you could see your breath, then it's get dressed. So you can be a little bit more hardcore and you could go towards an option like that and see. I don't think my wife would let me put this up, but it is a valiant effort and I appreciate the creativity and the logic that went into it for the engineers out there.
Yeah, that is funny. The other one that kind of jumps out to me, the last one from this category, is declutter and donate room by room. And this goes back to what I said, you know, 20 minutes ago about the oasis. Like, I mean, even my family, like, we find ourselves getting, you know, the house gets cluttered. It's just sometimes, you know, it happens bit by bit. And yeah, I mean, you can really declutter, you can donate, you can possibly sell things. You know, we generally prefer to donate, but with a lot of the different marketplaces, like, there's a way to make some money on selling some of these unused things. And you have to, again, it comes back to being honest with yourself, right? Like, that's what I said, is that's the first step of FI with your finances. But like, it comes down to that with everything. You know, Chris Hutchins was talking about this last episode about like, hey, have you worn those clothes in the last six months? Yeah, I would even extend it to 12, let's say, right? So, you know, season by season. But like, if you haven't worn something in a year or two, you're probably never going to wear it. It might be time to donate. So I think that's kind of a cool concept.
All right. We move on to categories here. We could talk about transportation expenses and we could certainly talk about this, but Brad, we actually did a great episode. I think it's aged actually really well. It was episode 22 of our podcast where we talked about the high cost of car ownership. And I think if you could just pull out at a high level why this matters to our actual FI number, and yes, it's a 1% decision, but it makes a meaningful difference on, you know, how much money we're going to have when we reach financial independence.
Yeah, we, like you said, episode 22, definitely check that out. We talked two different ways. So you talked about the kind of year by year differences. And I actually looked, it's interesting how we kind of think differently, but it's the same concept of, I looked at the long-term ramifications of basically like managing the payment on your leased car or constantly having a new car, whatever, every 5 years or thereabouts versus buying, I even said a new car, right? But, you know, in all likelihood, the better 1% better is buying a used car and holding that car for 15 years, right? you have three of those cycles over, as ridiculous as it sounds, a 45-year period. I mean, the savings of that compounded when you're investing that difference. I mean, we actually said in that episode, it was almost $750,000 over 45 years. $742,000 is how we estimated it. And that's one decision on your car. So that is probably the best example of why these 1%, these aggregation of marginal gains, why it all adds up. Imagine when you start doing multiple of these, you know, somewhat substantial decisions, right? Like you save $300 or $400 a month on food. And I'm sure, Jonathan, that's on the list here, but right, like $300 or $400 a month on whatever, right? Like your housing situation or whatever it may be, like you start stacking 3, 4, 5 of those things, you're literally talking multiple millions of dollars over your lifetime. Yeah. Just for decisions that you are not going to feel at all. That's the beautiful part about this.
Yeah. I mean, if we make smarter decisions around our investing, we make smarter decisions around our tax optimization, we make smarter decisions around our transportation, and we optimize, you know, I'll go with our food budget right now. You know, if we just kind of look at these big pillars and we just try to be a little bit better than average, we don't need to be the world's greatest at any one of them. We certainly don't need to push the lines of deprivation on any of them, but if we can just do better than average and not hemorrhage money in these categories, you're going to have millions more than your counterpart that's just kind of drifting through their financial life. That is not hyperbole. That's just compound interest working for you instead of against you.
Yeah. And Jonathan, one other, you know, talk about drifting through financial life. I know this is one thing that I'm guilty of on this list here. Number 33 is shop your car insurance rates every year. And I would extend this to shopping all of your insurance rates every year. I think this is one of those things that we just need to have as part of our yearly to-do tasks, right? Like I should have this in my to-doist list. I don't know. It's kind of criminal that I don't, but you would be shocked at how much money you can save. And I think it's funny. I keep extending these things, but it's amazing how this spins out, because all of these concepts, they're just so similar. Like we think that companies treat us well because we've been with them a long time. And it almost invariably works the opposite way, right? Like you get special teaser rates for your whatever, your cable, right? Or your cell phone or whatever it may be for being a new customer. So the companies aren't incentivizing you for staying. They're incentivizing you to come to them. So, and really what that means then is to leave your old company, right? So I think that's just, it's unfortunate that that's how it works. But frankly, that is how it works. That's how life is. So we need to be aware of that, right? So what you should be doing is you should be getting quotes. That might mean if you switch, as annoying as this is, once a year between, if you have it in your time, you know, Verizon and Comcast, that's what we have, right? For our cable. It's annoying to switch every year, but I guarantee you, you're going to save 20 to 50%, right? And the same works more broadly with insurance. I find that you will be shocked at how much you can save, whether that's your car insurance, your homeowner's insurance, your term life insurance. And these policies, you know, at the end of the day, they're all substantially similar. I'm sure, you know, there are insurance agents listening who are going to get mad at me at that, but they're substantially similar. I won't say they're identical, but, you know, in most cases, you can do pretty well just doing this on price.
Don't tell Verizon, but I would never leave Verizon to go to Comcast. Ever, ever, ever. So if you're like, but I wouldn't really leave, you still need to negotiate. And if you're not really willing to negotiate, it makes you cringe to even think about it. There are services that will do this for you. Now, they're going to take a little piece of the savings. That's how they make their money, but they will do it for you. And they will do it just when they know it's coming up. I'm thinking of companies like Trim. I think if you go to chooseify.com/Trim, we have a whole article talking about them as a service, and they actually will negotiate these bills on your behalf. And then for the homeowner's insurance, Brad is not using this one. I am. And I was shocked at how quick they gave me the rate and how inexpensive this rate was. I mean, we're living in the future here. They can do a lot of this stuff just using algorithms. Go to chooseify.com/lemonade if you want more information. Like, I was in a pinch where the one insurance company was going to drop me because I was working from home. We're all working from home. Like, seriously, they wanted to drop me because I was working from home. And so I needed insurance fast. And I went with Lemonade. And I was shocked at how good the deal was, how great the rate was. And their whole claim to fame is that they pay out faster than anyone else with like literally no friction. So between the amazing rate and the payout, it's probably worth checking out. Chooseofi.com/lemonade. Those are just a couple examples for those of you that was something that appealed to you and you know you're overdue on that. As we scroll through these, the next category that we were going to talk about was healthcare. And I think anybody's, oh, what do you got? Yeah. Oh, yeah, we figured it out. We secretly have figured out healthcare, and all of you are on the one system. And Brad and I, we are just on this fast lane to happiness of healthcare inside the United States. And we've been holding out on you the entire time.
We're joking because we're really crying inside. Crying desperately.
It's to the point, dude. You start wondering about these whole experiments where just like, I think Mr. Money Mustache did it, where he just, I'm just going to go a couple years without health insurance and just see how it goes. And I mean, it's like, they are like trying to push the line of like, how expensive can we make it before people actually start considering that as a valid strategy? That's the reality of where we are here in the United States. But having said that, inside the confines of this is what we got to work with. And
we're not advocating.
And we're not advocating that. Then Brad, there are a few ways that you can optimize inside the margins, and I will share just two. And then I know because you've experienced a couple more recently, I'll let you stack on those more nuanced ones after this. The one is, you know, we can go with a high deductible plan and we can take advantage of the HSA, which gives us additional pre-tax options for those of us that have that available to us. And then on the pharmacy side, I'll just go ahead and throw this one out there. When you have medications that you need to get, there's a free tool. We're not affiliated with them, but there's a free tool you can use called GoodRx that will allow you to look for discount codes or coupon codes. We've actually talked about this in depth on another episode, so I won't go into all the nuance of this. But for those of you that have high deductible plans, that means you're paying a disproportionate amount out of pocket and you know you're not going to hit your deductible each year. Then the discounts that GoodRx will provide you will be astonishingly low, and it can make a very compelling case to just, you know, take the discount card as opposed to running it through your insurance, which is insane. But that, again, is just the crazy world that we are inside the United States. So, Brad, I know you've actually layered on maybe a comparable approach to the medicine side, and it would be a good time to overlay that here.
Yeah, and it's funny. That's actually the strategy that I've taken. So for me, our health insurance is literally like the definition of insurance, which is just catastrophe, more or less, at this point. So if I get hit by a bus or have a heart attack or something, like, then it will come in handy. But I've come to the conclusion now that we have such a high deductible that there's almost invariably a better way to get some price certainty and to ultimately then save some money and just do it outside of the insurance policy, which is sad that, you know, we're paying a huge amount of premiums every month and it's essentially for nothing, but it's really not for nothing, right? It's for that catastrophe. And as long as I've kind of come to grips mentally with that, it at least helps me sleep at
Brad
night.
And I have
cry,
come to various level of grips.
Yep. But what I have found, so just real quick, my, you know, cause we can belabor this for hours. So I've mentioned this probably 5 times on the last month or two. I have not used this service, but I will the next time that I have any type of health issue that's not a catastrophe. Again, it's something that I can plan in advance. There's a website called mdsave.com that, again, it allows you to basically purchase with price certainty certain types of tests and procedures from reputable providers in your area. You know, in a perfect world, that MDSave has doctors and facilities that they've worked with in your area. I think, Jonathan, for us, unfortunately, the closest is about an hour away, but still, I would have saved over $1,000 on a CT scan that I had a couple months ago, and I didn't know about MDSave. So yeah, that unfortunately is $1,000 that is just burned in a fireplace, as far as I'm concerned, that I would still have in my bank account had I known about that. So that is a cool one. I've been doing some kind of a la carte blood testing, and there's a website called ultalabtests.com, U-L-T-A, labtests, plural, .com. And that's really wonderful. They actually do it through like the major like Quest Diagnostics. So you just show up, you have an appointment, and it's really, really cheap. And again, it comes down to price certainty, because sometimes you get blood tests done and it shows up and you owe $400, and I could have gotten it for $37.95 through Ulta. So I'm actually going for another vitamin D test tomorrow, actually, Jonathan. So this is something that I personally have used, and it's really great.
Well, you know, the next option is we're going to look at groceries and dining out, but I think it really stacks really nicely because what we're talking about here is lifestyle, you know, factors. And it is hard to overstate how much health benefits there are to you having more time to focus on exercise and the food choices that you're making. You know, I was actually just talking to a buddy of mine. He's a rheumatologist, and he was kind of belaboring or bemoaning the fact that he just doesn't have as much time to spend with his patients talking about lifestyle and diet factors and what was the root cause that they're actually seeing him. It's just not really built into the model. It's more, how is the treatment progressing? If you have the time to spend experimenting on your health, experimenting on the foods that, you know, promote a healthier lifestyle, experimenting on like how much exercise does your body need? To me, I mean, I would say probably 80, 90% of, you know, the treatment modalities that we see out there would go so much farther if they're stacked on a healthy diet and lifestyle. I mean, maybe you could say as much as 100%, but, you know, for the sake of this conversation, we'll just say this is the 80-20. There are pre-existing conditions. There are genetic conditions. There are things that are unavoidable. But it is hard to overstate the power that slowly cleaning up your diet and lifestyle will have on your long-term health. It is the core foundation. And so, you know, when we talk about groceries and dining out, when we talk about, you know, making meals at home instead of eating everything out of a box, a frozen box, it's going to have a massive impact. When we talk about you knowing what's actually going inside your food instead of, you know, the fast food restaurant that was more easily accessible every single day, it is hard to overstate the power that'll happen there. So, you know, we need to then look, okay, well, we understand fundamentally, like when we know what we're actually, the ingredients that are actually going into our meals, that's going to be definitely a 1% improvement. How can we, you know, come up with some sort of like framework or parameters for what is a good amount to spend on our meals? Like what's an appropriate amount to budget? How do I know if I'm crushing it versus just doing better than average? And I think, Brad, this is where you and Laura have talked about really comes in handy as just a framework. It's not prescriptive, but I think it is useful for people just to have something in mind.
Yeah, agreed. And this is what we've talked about on the podcast many, many times is my wife and I kind of anchor ourselves to $2 per person per meal for dinners. And that might sound like a shockingly low number, but over the course of really the last decade, we've curated, and Laura has curated, a series of recipes that are fantastic, absolutely delicious. Certainly, I would say well above average on the health side and are at or near that $2 per person per meal. So I think this is one of those like just major, as you said, Jonathan, major like force multipliers in life is you can get healthier, you can feel better, and you can save a boatload of money, right? We talked about the cars, right? Saving $300 or $400 a month can be $750,000 over a 45-year period. I mean, most people can really cut out about $500 per month on their food budget just with applying a little intentionality. So we actually have a PDF download of 30 of these meals that Laura and I eat pretty much, you know, this is our yearly meals more or less. So chooseavi.com/meals. And yeah, you can just get this nice PDF download and yeah, let me know if you eat any of these. So I get emails, Jonathan, all the time at feedback@chooseavi.com with people who are like, oh, I had your chicken paprikash. It was the best thing I've ever made. And yeah, it's really cool. I would highly, highly recommend that. So that is a major force multiplier. And yeah, just kind of last word on this health area is, you know, groceries and health. You know, Jonathan, this is something like you're not speaking from a place on high. Like that's something, you know, you have talked here many times about how you struggle with your weight. And, you know, it seems like you're at a point now where like you are at that steady state, which is just really, really cool. So again, it's not about just making drastic changes necessarily. It's about putting systems in place that set you up for long-term success. And I think nothing can describe FI better than that more broadly, right? Setting up systems that set you up for long-term success.
I would give, yeah, being on the path to FI all the credit for finally having the time to really find out about myself, understand myself a little bit better. And, you know, what are the routines that were sending me to a dark place? And what are the systems that allow me to really be where I want to be at a particular point in time? All right, guys, I think we have covered, you know, as really as many as we could fit into this episode. I want to give you just a couple more categories to think of to spark, you know, some ideas here. And I would encourage you just go to the show notes for this episode. And or Brad, did we have a short link? I'm trying to remember. Was it chooseify.com/1% to see the full article? Chooseify.com/1%. That's the number one. And then percent, P-E-R-C-E-N-T. It'll take you to the full episode. As you guys start to kind of map this out and think about what other, you know, kind of categories could we consider, there's certainly your clothing, there's your shopping and your services that you're using on a regular basis. We talked a little bit about how to negotiate things like internet, cell phone, and entertainment. A lot of things that you can do there. There's some stuff in the childcare category. I know for those of you that are trying to look for ways to optimize, there's some really good ideas there. Travel and sightseeing. We talk about this all the time. In fact, we just talked about it this past episode, but I will say for those of you that want to learn, how can I basically create for myself an extra, I don't know, $2,000 to $4,000 a year and just totally extra income that you can use tax-free to travel anywhere around the world, it's probably worth your time to find out about this. You could go check out chooseify.com/travel for our free course on how to do it. And Brad, we recently put together an episode really talking about some of the updated strategies right now. Do you have that episode number?
Yeah, that was episode 311. So yeah, basically, you know, for all of us, we're getting back into travel and you know, it really, if you haven't already, it's really time to start accumulating travel rewards points. And Jonathan, you and I have talked so many times how Chase Ultima Rewards points are our absolute favorite. So highly, highly, highly recommend the Chase Sapphire Preferred card. And you can read our full review if you go to chooseify.com/CSP. That's CSP for Chase Sapphire Preferred. So yeah, that's a really great one. Yeah. I mean, travel, there's tons of ways to save money. So there's a great list here. You know, Jonathan, some of these things we talked already, like you actually mentioned a minute ago, negotiate, right? Like that's one of those things that I think people need to really consider. And that one of the phrases that jump out to us is everything is negotiable, right? It never hurts to ask. Like, again, I actually, you know, I was talking about healthcare before. I wound up having, everything's fine, by the way, I'm perfectly healthy, but I had a routine procedure, but you know, unfortunately it was an expensive routine procedure. And I actually just asked, hey, is there a pay in full discount? And they said, because it was slightly over $1,000. So it was because it was over $1,000, I got a 30% discount, Jonathan. So I was literally going to pay the full amount with my credit card, but I just asked that simple question. And they gave me 30% off. So that's, I got, amazing. You know, right.
You were, and, you know, you were going in to pay it. And then they were like, if I pay it, can you give me a discount? No.
Literally was going to pay it. So, you know, there's lots of things that we just need to rethink, right? Like we've talked about cell phones. Cell phones are another just super simple one that you can save a boatload of money on. A lot of people are still, even in 2021, are paying $100 a month for the unlimited package of everything. Like, I mean, I pay $15 a month on my cell phone. You know, there's Mint Mobile, there's Republic Wireless, there's other comparable different companies. I mean, there's no excuse to be paying $80 to $100 a month anymore on your cell phone. So, I mean, it's just thinking a little bit differently. You know, it's just looking for what are the new options, not, oh, this is what I've done for the last 10 years. You just need to scrutinize. And it doesn't mean it's hard. It doesn't mean you have to waste a lot of time. But like, these are really high value changes.
Couldn't agree more. And you know, saving money puts more money in your pocket. The other thing that puts more money in your pocket is earning more money. And the last kind of category, and we have so many kind of suggestions to spark that rabbit hole here on this article, it's worth looking into. I mean, there's never been really an easier time to just start a side hustle or start an income producing opportunity with very little risk. So whether we're talking about salary negotiation, whether we're looking at pivoting into a new industry, using a new skill that we've learned, or whether we're looking at our investments, how do I optimize my investments, reduce fees, et cetera. These are all worth your time and they all count. So Brad does this bi-weekly. Every single week where he's asking for the action that you've taken. Wouldn't it be cool if you use the next 52 weeks to talk about how you got 1% better and maybe use this article as an opportunity to spark the idea and then take action on that idea. So Brad, I just mentioned your newsletter. We'll just round up this episode with that. How can they find out more about that and what should they expect if they do?
Yeah. So every Tuesday I put out the Phi Weekly, and it's just, it's really like the most fun thing I do all week. It's just like this, hey, what's been going on? What have I come across that's interesting that I think will be useful for the community? And it's just a variety of things, from inspirational quotes to money saving tips to, hey, the tax deadline got extended to May 17th this year, right? And also really focusing on what is the community doing to take action? I ask every single week to hit reply and tell me what was the action you took this week to make your life better. And I mean, Jonathan, you actually went into our email system recently and like you were blown away by the responses I got, right? It's just,
it's a very positive place. It's a very positive, awesome place.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're ever feeling bad about yourself, you just log into that email and just see, wow, people are listening to the show. And as a community, we are taking action, right? We're trying to make our lives better. And it sounds trite, but it genuinely starts from these small changes, right? You don't need to move tomorrow to a low cost of living area. Like you can just make a phone call and ask for a better price on your cable, right? Like that one thing, and they're going to start snowballing. You're going to add these up. You're going to have dozens, hundreds of changes. And your life is going to be dramatically changed for the better. So, Jonathan, I think this 1% better is really one of the most important just overall frameworks that we really have ever touched on here.
Yeah, Brad, couldn't agree more. And it's nice to kind of see them all come together. And really a lot of care has been put into aggregating these over literally hundreds of episodes in one place for you to really spark that springboard. So for individuals listening to this that want to participate in that newsletter, go to chooseify.com/subscribe. Last thing I want to say here, Brad, I just want to tack it on the end. I feel like you mentioned on this last episode that there is going to be a Camp Fi coming up. The Mid-Atlantic Camp Fi is coming up and you are planning on going. And so I wanted to confirm that that is a true statement. And if it is true for individuals that wanted to find out more, where can they go for the details?
Yeah, so it is a mostly true statement. I am planning on going. I haven't exactly locked down the days that I'm going to be there, but yeah, I'm really excited that Stephen is holding this event. Yeah, it's Camp Fis are back, which is super cool. So it looks like this one in Virginia is over Memorial Day weekend, so May 28th through the 31st. And you can find out all the details. You can just Google Camp Fi or just go directly to campfi.org. So yeah, this is pretty cool. I can't wait to be back in person with the Fi community. It's been, goodness, it's been almost a year and a half. So it should be cool.
That's awesome. And all right, you hear that, my friends. The fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
If this episode was helpful to you, don't forget to subscribe. If you want to help spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends about us. We can be found on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. While you're there, don't forget to check out our other shows like Everyday Courage with Julian Johnsrud and Rebel Entrepreneur with Alan Dalmagan. If you would like a free bite-sized course to jumpstart your financial independence, check out chooseify.com/challenge. Chooseify is produced by Andrew Mendonza and Zachary Tan and is a production of Chooseify Media Incorporated. Chooseify.com is managed by Annie Sheely with William McVeigh, MK Williams, Melissa Lagerquist, Liz Kessler, Stephen Hettig, Kelly Black, and Jennifer Ma. And Ed T is our CEO. Thanks for listening.